Yeah, here we are. Rock to Recovery Radio. I am your host, Wes Geer, and we are on KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM station, human-crafted radio. And as many of you know who've tuned in before, I always start off with, why are we here? Well, first of all, I'm a sober dude who somehow did not die. And by the way, not to make this all about me, I just got 11 years sober.
Congrats.
Who is that? We don't know yet. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. Yeah, I got 11 years sober. So somewhere on my journey, you figure out that helping people is really the key to happiness and fulfillment in this life. And this radio show kind of landed in my lap. And the idea of what we're doing here on Rock to Recovery Radio every week is that we're sharing stories from rad humans like athletes, rock stars, celebrities, in this case, a news anchor. Mm-hmm. Who is
with
it?
With 9 years sober.
Whoa.
Courtney Friel.
Oh, my gosh. You just let the cat out of the bag.
From my previous years at Fox News, but I've been at KTLA in Los Angeles for the past 6 years.
Whoa. So she let the cat out of the bag. Well, that's okay. Courtney Friel is here with me. And yeah, and so what we do here is we talk about things like addiction, mental health, PTSD, TBI, deadly ailments, for which in some form or fashion we've all been touched by. You know, either people at home are maybe struggling or sober themselves, or you know somebody, or you lost a loved one, or your brother, or your father, or whatever. We've had wounded veterans in here. And so by talking about these challenges, we give strength to each other and we share information. But the part I love most about it and why I picked the guests I do is it's when I thought I was going to get sober, I thought life would be over and be some diminished view of the world. Like the metaphor I always use is like a guy that came back from war. Hey, Bob, you lived. Yeah, I lived, but my legs are blown off. I thought that was what recovery was going to be like. But you learn that when we get into recovery and we work these programs of recovery, whatever they are, that we become people we never even knew we were. We truly unlock our true potential, and we have these incredible lives, and it gets us into what I call the vortex of radness. And I think Courtney Friel is definitely in the vortex of radness. So pretend we didn't...
You Friel my vibe.
I'm Frieling you, girl. I'm Frieling you so hard. So pretend we didn't introduce her yet, and welcome to the radio show, Courtney Friel.
Hi. For having me, Wes.
You're welcome. Do me a favor, darling. In this station, you got to get right up on that mic.
Okay.
Yeah, we want to hear you good. So, or well. See, I'm a rock and roller. I don't have to use proper English. We're allowed to speak wrong.
As long as you don't use curse words.
Yeah, no curse words. Yes, exactly. So, thank you for coming down. You're super duper duper busy. Mm-hmm. You're the KTLA news anchor. How many nights a week?
I report 3 nights a week and then fill in during the week, but I'm the main or the weekend anchor.
The weekend anchor.
4 hours on the weekend nights.
That's a lot. And you have 2 children's?
I do. Cash is almost 8, Cameron is almost 7. So, I'm busy.
Busy mom and being a news anchor. You told me you had just worked like, you know, a million days in a row before coming down here.
Yeah, cuz I also shoot side things too. Like I'm going to be in season 3 of Veep.
Nice.
As a news anchor 3 different times. I shot for them in the past month, and I went to Hawaii and filmed a role in the Godzilla versus Kong movie.
That's incredible.
I only do reporter anchor roles. I'm not like an actress.
Right now.
But those are extra things that I do on my days off. So it's just been crazy and all the holiday events and so many things going on. But I meditated for 20 minutes outside in the car before coming in here. So I was really stressed out earlier, and now I'm all good. Ready to talk about this because I agree with everything that you just said.
Yeah, well, good. And if you didn't, that's good too. But I love that you shared that you meditated. I think it's so underutilized. But on your way down here from La La Land, a.k.a. Los Angeles, for those of you that don't know, we're recording Laguna Beach. Busy woman. You know how L.A. people are. What? Leave Los Angeles and drive into Orange County. You know, it's kind of a deal. I get it. So I appreciate you. But more to the point, I love that when you're feeling stressed and overwhelmed, you went to meditation.
Mm-hmm. And it's my lifesaver. Well, it's my coping tool in sobriety for sure.
Yeah.
I didn't have it for the first 5 years of my recovery, though. I learned or came into my life at year five.
Yeah. I think it came into my life around year two, the second time year two. So kind of similar. And how did it make you feel? What did it do for you?
I was resistant to it because I thought, oh my gosh, I'm never going to pay a babysitter to go sit on a floor somewhere with a bunch of other people. Like, I need to be burning calories. Oh. And I can't sit still. I'm too busy. You know, I'm really ADD. Everyone says that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I was in a really bad place, and obviously I couldn't numb out with alcohol or drugs, so someone invited me to a class, and I went, and they held up a jar that had sparkles, glitter in it, and water, and they said, okay, they shook it, this is your brain, you have 80 to 90,000 thoughts a day.
Ooh, I like that metaphor.
In your head, and when you sit it down, it stills everything out. And so I was like, ooh, a glitter analogy. I can understand that. And after the first class, I just felt really relaxed, and they said, do a mantra, just keep focusing on that. And since then, I've made up like so many mantras that I use. I just started noticing after each, I committed to doing it for a month. So after I did that class, I did the month membership, and I went 3 times a week for that month. And I just started noticing how things in my life were changing. Like, I was less irritated with traffic, or you just become way more present and focus on today and not worry so much about the future. I have a whole list of things. And then
exactly.
A year goes by and I've been doing it, and there's like a couple weeks where I didn't get in, and I was starting to notice like when I really need it.
Yeah. My favorite part about what you said was there's so many things you get out of it. Meditation, I mean, I'm not kidding you, and this show isn't about that, but I've I've spoke to dead people. I got the corn gig from it. I created Rock to Recovery from it. I started seeing the future. I know it sounds weird. These thoughts would come obsessively, and then they would happen.
Well, it takes you into another level of conscious. Like, I almost feel, I already was an empath, but I can feel people's energies, and which is kind of bad for the job that I do,
because
I pick up a lot of negative stuff too, or I try to protect myself from it.
Yeah.
But I feel like my intuition is so on, and
yeah.
Yeah, it's and you definitely just like trust the universe more and can manifest things.
1,000,000%. Well, you know, and we won't go on this too much longer, but I'll leave it here. We know that the entire universe is energy, right? This physical realm is an illusion, right? Because atoms are actually more space than they are matter. Mm-hmm. So we're tapping into that energetic realm, aren't we?
We are. Well, like attracts like. So
yeah.
We found each other through Instagram, right?
Yeah,
let's
high five.
All you right. did KTLA stuff too.
I did. Casey Montoya.
Yes.
That's how it happened, pretty much.
Right. She made the intro. And we've been planning the show for months and months and months, and I feel bad because I've had to cancel it those shoots that I just mentioned. So.
Hey, show is happening.
I get it. It's happening now. Let's help people.
Let's help people. So here's how I do the show. I like to do like what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And so, you know, for some people, their story doesn't necessarily start in their childhood. And we don't necessarily blame our addiction on our youth, but there's usually a lot of relevant stuff that happens back then. How about you?
Right.
Where would you start the story?
My story was that I was really shy as a kid, and I was really bullied. It goes back to even being 6 years old with girls being mean to me. And then
I can't imagine you being bullied.
All through high school, I got it the worst. People would say, like, you're so, you know, traumatized by these people. They're so mean to you. And I didn't know how to stick up for myself. And I wasn't I'm not a confrontational person by nature anyway. So I was like going to church all the time. I'm like, turn the other cheek. And so two things happened. One, I always knew that I wanted to be a news anchor. So I just lived in the studio and would just focus on that. And I said, success is going to be the best revenge. Like, F these people. And so then I also discovered drinking at age 15. And right from the very beginning, I was a hot mess. But I loved how it just made me ignore all those bullies, the people being mean to me. Like, I could just numb them out that way. And I also came out of my shell. I started being really like kind of how I am now, but I just was really funny to people and I hung out with the partiers and I got more confidence and
liquid courage.
Right. And thought that having fun went along with drinking as well. And so when I got sober, I definitely thought, oh my God, I'm never going to have any fun.
So
anymore.
Let's go. And I get that. Let's go back to your childhood though. What age did you start getting bullied at? Was your family life normal? Like, I mean, you know, everything was cool at home. Mom and dad were together.
My parents are still together.
That's weird.
And my dad, you know, he drinks probably every day and probably is like a functioning alcoholic, but he wouldn't get, I thought alcoholics were people that were passed out on the couch, beating their wives, not paying their bills.
Right.
And so my dad like would get up and run 2 miles and then read the Bible for a half hour and then go to work all day. But he would like come home and drink at night, but he wasn't like sloppy drunk or anything. So,
you think he's an alcoholic?
Genetically, I don't know. Hopefully my mom's not watching. She thinks he is, but my dad did say to me, I remember he said, Courtney, if I didn't have God and work in my life, like I would drink all the time. And I don't,
interesting.
Yeah. I mean, I think that runs through your family. Yeah. He was an amazing dad. So I don't have any like typical issues that I think that it's just genetics
we
and the bullying factor too, because I felt like why didn't I fit in? Like, why didn't people like me?
I totally get it. We know that addiction is carried forth genetically and it's strongest on the father's side. It's not a guarantee, but we know that that is at an absolute occurrence.
Well, see, I have an all or nothing personality in my life anyways, whether it's with a bag of Skittles or Wheat Thins in many aspects of my life. Like, I just like want to know, like, are we in it? Are we not? You know, what's the point of having like a couple Wheat Thins? Like, no, I need to eat half the box and have myself feel sick. Like, I just and so with drinking, I mean, I tried forever to just limit it to weekends or one night a week, and everyone could always convince me to go out every single day.
Yeah, and you're in showbiz. So what was life like for you? Okay, so dad drank, but he was always there for you, mom and
right, and we went to
together.
Church every Sunday through high school, so I wasn't even allowed to sleep out on Saturday nights. I mean, if I did, they would hunt me down and take me to church. So I feel like
That's
I have
cool.
a lot of core values from growing up.
You had that anchor, strong anchor.
Presbyterian church. And so, you know, that's my higher power. Like, God helps me through this. And I know he saved me and helped me be in this situation.
That's cool. And so it's pretty normal. What kind of, I like to paint the picture because especially I think it's almost more intriguing that you are a news anchor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where did this come from? So were you like a cheerleader? Were you like normal? Were you a bookworm?
I was never a sorority girl or cheerleader. I watched the news with my dad. And so in third grade was when I was like, oh, I want to do that. And so
really?
I always,
that's cool.
I wrote for my school's newspapers and I anchored those little morning announcements, like the book club will be meeting in the library.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, that was me.
That's cool. You were so into it too, huh?
I also had success early on too. Like, I came out to LA and when I was a junior in high school.
Where did you
grow
up? For
Channel One News. I'm from Pennsylvania, outside of Philadelphia. And so I was doing stuff all through college. Like, I was working on Oprah's channel while I was in college, and I was always doing a bunch of internships. Like, I just wanted to get out into the real world and start my career. And that's where I started my work hard, play hard mentality. Like, after school in high school, I would be in the TV studio to 10 o'clock at night, like doing tons of
reports. What grade are we talking here?
All, like from 9th through 12th.
And you said third grade you were doing.
Third grade's when I knew what I wanted to do.
Yep.
And so middle school was when I had my first chance to write for the paper and do the morning announcements. And then that went on to high school.
So sounds like you were living kind of like, I don't know how to explain it. You're a good student, right?
For the most part. I was B+.
Yeah, yeah. But like, you seems like you were like a kid that was getting to do all the extracurricular stuff and having a lot of success there. Where like I was a kid who was ditching, never doing his homework.
Oh, no, yeah. So I was really focused on becoming a news anchor. So I'm doing what I always wanted to do. So even on bad days, I have to remind myself that I'm doing what I always wanted to do.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, same with me. I mean, this is what I tell my guys, like people I work with and mentors, even on tour with Korn. There's days where I'm like, I don't want to fly to Mexico and not sleep and play a show because it's a lot of whatever. It doesn't matter. Right. It's my dream. I have my dream life. It doesn't matter what job you have. There's going to be days where you go. Now, my stepdad will tell you different. He's a cop. And he's like, I loved it every day. I'm like, okay, dude.
No, I feel like no job is 100% perfect. There are people who, I'm not going to mention them, celebrities in jobs that I would kill to have,
yeah,
that I have heard them say, like, ugh, taking this job is the worst job, worst move for my career. I wish I was doing more of this or that. I'm like, yeah, I would die to have that job.
Sure. So now,
I just try to be grateful for everything that I have.
Yeah, and that's a choice of focus, right? Like Tony Robbins talks about that, right? Reel in the focus and put it back on gratitude. So you're getting bullied, but it wasn't affecting your schoolwork. Did you have any emotional issues, any anger issues? Was it manifesting in any way, or was, aside from the bullying, things pretty normal for you?
I think I just numbed everything out. Yeah. My family was very sweep things under the carpet. Like, it's all about, like, how things look. Oh, everything's fine, and my mom didn't understand why she was. I remember her saying, like, you must be doing something wrong if they're not, like, what are you doing to provoke them? Like,
oh, really? You had those conversations?
Now I know they were just jealous. And here I was on the morning announcements and stuff. And also, it just seemed like I was ignoring them. Now I know to confront bullies or kill them with kindness or talk it out. But I just ignored them, and that pissed them off even more and provoked them to do more stuff. And I would just continue to be like, whatever, it doesn't bother me. And then I got into this work hard, play hard life.
Yeah.
And the cycle continued for 15 years.
I like how you say that, you brought up that your mom was like, you know, just ignore it, sweep it under the carpet. Because I think that's kind of the big difference between a generation ago and our more current generations.
Yeah.
And I get it. Maybe we're going too far and we don't want to use things as excuses. But we did when I grew up, like my dad never talked to me about feelings. And it's important to look at feelings and why and like, how does that make you feel, and get it out there. Now we talk about
right.
it probably
and with
too
my
much.
Kids,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
Always
yeah.
like trying to find out, well, you know, any if they are ever having an emotional thing.
Yeah.
Like, well, what's really going on? What are you really feeling?
Because stuffing it doesn't mean they go away. And it gets trapped inside
our body.
But that's
what you're doing when you're using drugs or alcohol.
Numbing it out.
And nothing, what I learned in rehab that they drilled in my head over and over again, nothing is going to get better by drinking or drugging. The problem's still going to be there. All you're doing is delaying dealing with it. And it's just better to deal with it, feel it, grieve it, get through it right away. And it's a shorter amount of recovery time than it is to, like, do. And drinking a drug is just going to make it worse on top of that.
It's not a lifestyle that's going to take you anywhere, you know? So you get through elementary school. High school was pretty normal. Same?
Well, aside from the bullying, yeah.
Aside from the bullying,
my first year of college, I had the same problem. So I moved out to L.A.
You got bullied in college, too.
Yeah.
And you went where?
Well, that was because I went to my first year of school at Elon in North Carolina, and the first semester you couldn't rush. So I guess all of the girls in the
I'm not a college guy. What does rush mean?
Well, for sororities or fraternities.
Okay, gotcha.
And it was a smaller school. So all these girls, for once in my life, all these girls were nice to me. And they'd invite me up to the Tri Sigma house for 90210 night. And I remember my friends being like, what's the big deal? I'm like, you don't understand. Older girls have never been nice to me ever. So I was so excited. But really, they were dirty rushing me to get me into their sorority. So then when springtime came around and I didn't rush because I knew by then I was going to move out to L.A., then they were all like, they wouldn't even talk to me anymore. I'd be like, hi, so-and-so. And they literally just stick their nose up. And then all the same high school drama with the rumors and blah, 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 people being mean and all of that stuff came back from those people.
How'd that make you
feel?
Girls
are mean. Well, I mean, that's why I
loved. Do you remember?
I loved coming out to L.A. because everyone was so focused on themselves here. It's like they're not worrying about you. And that, I mean, even when I went to Fox News, I had issues with bullies.
Okay, how did it make you feel?
It makes you feel like...
No, how did it make you feel?
I was kind of like, why don't they like me? Like, why is judged like a, I'm always judged wrong all
it
the
hurts,
time. People always tell me, they're like, oh, I thought you were going to be like this or like that, or you're so not like that.
But see, it's hard for us to talk about the feelings. Do you notice that's even being hard for you? You're not using feelings.
I don't like feelings.
Right.
I don't like them at all.
Right.
That's why.
Do you remember any of the feelings that you had when you were in college? I'm going deep right now. I'm not letting you get away.
Well, college, by that point, I lived in the TV studio there and drank like crazy. So I just wanted to get messed up on my off time.
Was the drinking progressing in a way? It sounds like it was progressing in frequency.
And it also went to cocaine. I mean, that's a huge part of my
story. There it is right there. So what was your drinking and cocaine life like in college? Were you missing classes? Were you screwing up?
And also I was doing a ton of ecstasy.
Oh, there
it is. That
was
like the best drug ever, I think.
I mean, there's a reason they call it ecstasy, right? But it also,
So it wasn't as bad. Like when I moved out to LA, that was when the cocaine situation got crazy because I moved in with this girl who had gone to Elon with me. We came out here and we needed a job. So we walked down the street to the tanning salon and the guy there was like, oh yeah, sure. You work Saturday, you work Sunday. And so she's like, all right, well, I'm going to go train with him. She doesn't come back till the next morning. She's like, dude, I was doing blow with our boss all night. So then it was my turn to train. Yeah. So I'm like, hey, I know what happened last night. So then that entire year, all we did was do cocaine in the tanning salon. Like I would do lines and then jump in the tanning bed and tan. How crazy is that?
That does not sound like a good time.
No, I would never be able to do that.
But you know what? I'm sure.
But I got straight A's in college that year because I would do it in school, in the bathroom. Like I would be in the library, I'd be like, okay, I'm studying. Let me go do a bump in the bathroom. Oh. And I was really skinny and really tan that year.
So
really
you're like,
unhealthy. So at the end of
but
that
you loved
year,
it.
Well, at the end of that year, I thought I was having a heart attack and I went to Cedar Sinai.
So that's how you got into rehab?
No. This
was Cedar Sinai Hospital.
We're still at 19 years old at this point.
Got
I didn't
you.
Get sober till
got
I was
you.
29.
Okay. Wait, I had a question here. So,
but when I went to Cedars for thinking I was having a heart attack.
What did they say?
They're like, no, it's just really bad acid reflux because all I do is drink
diet. They didn't know you're on cocaine?
Well, probably they did. I didn't volunteer that information. And so I had just drank so much crappy vodka and Diet Cokes for the entire year that I just had severe acid reflux.
Mm.
And it was, you know, it mimics a heart attack.
Mm. Oh, it does.
But then I got scared. I was like, I'll never do this again, God. And so for a year.
I did that.
For a year and a half, I stayed away from blow. But then once that came back in the mix, then it was like for the rest of the time, it was an issue.
So one thing I wanted to chime in on, which I like to point out certain stuff for people listening at home. Because, you know, I'm a musician. Somebody might go, I'm not a musician. How does this relate to me? You're a news anchor. How does it relate to them? But I like that you said you get straight A's mm-hmm. while you're on cocaine. For me, I had all these crappy bands, and then I found methamphetamine, and suddenly I started writing all these cool songs. We were the talk of the town, started selling out clubs. Black Flies is putting us in ads and magazines, and they were a cool company back then, like really cool. So it was like, what? They want to feature us after years of trying? The point is, there's a while for a lot of us that it works, or maybe you're a stockbroker that drinks whiskey or whatever.
Right. Yeah, and first of all, there's a lot of functioning alcoholics
and
drug users out there for sure.
Doesn't mean that you don't have
no, and I think that's
problem.
A lot. That's why a lot of people don't want to stop because they're like, well, but I do all my writing or my creative painting or whatever when I'm messed up.
Yeah, totally. That's how I was.
And look, when I first, you know, my first year of sobriety, I went through that. I mean, all I wanted to do was sleep all day. I didn't have energy. I used to get I'd wake up in the morning in New York and like to pop two Adderall and I'd get on my mini elliptical and I would like search for stories so that by like 8 in the morning, my producers would have like 20 stories, story ideas for me. And
so you were a tweaker too.
But not meth, although I probably snorted some meth accidentally.
Adderall is amphetamine.
Oh, yeah. Well, Adderall, like
just because it comes in a pill.
I have five things that were in my wheelhouse of drugs of choice, alcohol, coke, Xanax, because I always needed that to come down, or I always thought I was going to have a panic attack.
Yeah.
Adderall, and then finally at the end, it was like I was abusing Ambien majorly. I was like taking pills and then going out on the town. Like
that
I
makes you black out.
Oh, I was a walking blackout anyway. Mm-hmm. So it got scary.
So let's throw in. This is very entertaining for me, and hopefully you at home too, listening about. If you've seen, well, I'm sure a lot of you have. Courtney, she looks like the poster child for like wholesome beauty.
Right. No one ever thinks that I have had a problem.
You're the kind of person that used to piss me off because I had long hair, so I was always getting singled out. And then you're the one who probably had more cocaine in your purse than I ever had. And they'd be like, "Hi, Courtney, see you on Monday." And I'd be like, "What? She was doing blow in the bathroom. I'm innocent, I tell you."
Oh, I always say I could get away with so much stuff just by how I look.
Yeah, very wholesome looking. Okay, so let's throw in this song. Do you remember what it is?
Oh, for my song of Party Days.
Party Days.
Are we going to play that now?
Yeah, we're going to play it now.
I chose Daft Punk One More Time.
Daft Punk One More Time.
Just because that was right around my party years. And I just think like, oh, it's so fun to dance to. And just takes me back. There's so many songs, but I just thought of that one.
So when you listen to this song, I want you to hold up the picture of Courtney Friel looking all wholesome and imagine her super coked out dancing to Daft Punk. Yeah. So here we are on Rock to Recovery Radio. Also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health on KX 93.5 FM. I'm Wes Geer, your host. We're here with Courtney Friel, and this is Daft Punk.
One More Time.
One More Time. We'll be right back.
One more time.
We're gonna celebrate and dance so free.
One more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free, one more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free, one more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free, one more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free, one more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free, one more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate. One more time, just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free, one more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free, one more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free, one more time, you just got the feeling. So free, we're gonna celebrate, celebrate and dance. So free.
Yeah, I always love me some Daft Punk. This is Wes Geer, Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM. Also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. They have a bunch of amazing treatment programs like Simple Recovery, Avalon in Malibu for mental health and professionals programs. If you're looking for a great treatment provider, check out New Vista Behavioral Health. They're doing great work. I am here in studio with the beautiful, wholesome, vivacious, lovely Courtney Friel, and I'm really freeling it. She's the KTLA 5 news anchor, hardworking woman, mother of two boys, and we're talking about her story, how pretty normal family childhood. Aside from the bullying, which sounds pretty gnarly and persistent from elementary, high school, into college. And now by college, you've come out to L.A., right? And you're drinking, picked up to drinking cocaine, Adderall, Ambien, Xanax, right?
Well, that the pills started when I moved to New York City because doctors give them out like candy.
So
you pay them in cash because they don't take insurance. So they're be like, well, I guess you want something. We'll give you something for coming here.
What year are you talking here?
All right. Well, in my story, there was another kind of significant thing that I should mention in 2005. I had gotten the host gig for World Poker Tour for the fourth season. And I was also getting married.
For the TV show World Poker.
Yes.
Okay.
And the very first night, I went out with the crew afterwards and I went out with my husband at the time, but we ended up coming back into it was in the Bellagio kitchen area where we got to go eat food. So it was like 4 a.m. and I ran into the crew members and my dress was falling off and I passed out in a plate of spaghetti. And
of course,
since these are my new coworkers, they told on me and the head
guy.
I'm sure I looked awful. I'm sure it was great gossip for them. Like, oh my God, our new host. The very first night.
Yeah.
It's like passed out in a plate of spaghetti with her dress falling off.
Yeah.
So
where were you on the plate of spaghetti?
At the Bellagio in the employee kitchen.
In the employee kitchen. How did you get in the employee kitchen?
Because since we were shooting the show there, we had access to eat in the casino workers' room.
So you went hammered down, left the hubby downstairs. No,
I think he might have even been with me. Who knows?
I mean, what kind of hubby leaves the wifey in the pasta? But
that's why he's my ex,
yeah,
right?
You might want to go back and go, hey, by the way, I know we're broke up, but can you tell me how you ever left me in the anyhow?
Well, he partied a lot with me too.
I'm sure
he did. I leave him out of my stories just because we have a good relationship. So, anyways,
keep it that way.
So the head guy, they told the head guy. The head guy called my agent and was like, "Do we have a problem here?" And so that freaked me out, and I quit drinking for 9 months. Although I did drink in Paris and just never told anyone because it was the world. We traveled all around.
Did you tell people you were trying to quit?
I was just saying, because I wasn't doing any extra like programs or anything, any help or anything. I just kind of went cold turkey and was like, oh, I'm just being healthy right now. Yeah. And like I said, I did.
Did you think you had a problem?
Did you care? I did because I had just come off like leading up to my wedding. Because like I said, I got married right before the spaghetti incident. So
yeah.
I don't know if it's like I didn't want to get married or whatever, but I was on a really bad like Coke binge. And
when you so were was, married?
Well, leading getting up married? To my wedding. Yeah. And my wedding, I was really Coke depressed from that. I had 22 drinks on my wedding day. And ended up like dancing on a bar in a fight. Lost the bottom of my dress and my shoes somewhere. You don't understand. Like when I drank, I was out of control.
I do.
I would be crying. I would disappear. I would pass out.
What did your husband think?
I don't know. I mean,
when he was
I'm writing a book proposal now, so I've had to revisit some of these topics like with him. And I did ask him. I was like, "Hey, how did you feel that?" He was like, "I didn't really like that we got into a huge blow up on our wedding night."
Yeah.
And you were always so stubborn when you drink. Like you'd get in these fights.
Yeah.
For no reason, you'd pick a fight. Isn't even like me. I don't even like to fight, but apparently I had like some crazy alter ego come out. I was just a mess.
Well, my experience is fighting with drunk, not that I was a saint by any means, but you know, we can hold on to some concept that we're mad about that makes no sense and we just dig our heels in. And there's no
I'm a Taurus, so I'm stubborn by nature. Yeah.
And then we're all wasted trying to talk it out, which is just never gonna happen. Right. Do you ever hear a drunk person go, "You know what, I really see your point of view. I'm glad you pointed that out to me. Let's squash this right now." No. Right. We're gonna start throwing stuff. So
I tried for the 9 months, although I drank in Paris and didn't tell anyone, came back. And then we were shooting in the Bahamas, and the same guy who had convinced me to drink in Paris, he was a friend of one of the hosts that would like come on these trips. He peer pressured me into drinking in the Bahamas. And so I know what it's like to have stopped for an amount of time to go back to it. And they say, as they say, like off to the races. It's just like you get back right what you were doing.
Yeah. Now, when you quit for the 9 months, mm-hmm. did you think to yourself, this is easy? Were you like, oh, God, this is hell. I don't like how I feel. What was your thoughts about it?
I think I remember feeling good, but honestly, I can't really remember too much about it.
Yeah, sure.
That was back in 2005, and then the party years continued. I guess from, 2005 to 2009, then I was partying again.
Yeah. So, and it talks about this, there's literature on alcoholism and addiction that literally talks about how we have these periods where we lay off, and it therefore proves to us that we do not have a problem.
Right. That tricks, you know, you try to convince yourself of that.
Right. It convinces
you. And people always ask me, they're like, well, do you think now if you were to start drinking again, what if you started now? Like, don't you think like your life is different? You're a mom, like things would be different this time. No, because like I said, I'm an all or nothing person. There was no point ever for me to have one drink at a meal. Like people who, I don't even like the taste of alcohol to begin with. So people, it's mind baffling how there's people out there that can be like, I'm going to have a nice $500 red wine with my steak. And it's just, I'm just going to taste it together. It's like, what is the point of that?
Yeah.
First of all, why have any extra calories if you're just like having one drink? Like, there's no point to me. It was just like, and then once I have one, I'm like, well, I want, let's get some Coke and let's be up till the sun comes out. And it was just that all the time.
So, for example, when they started talking about alcoholism as a disease in the middle of the 1930s, right? And there was a lot of hypotheses about them, about this concept, which still goes on to debate now. But for example, the program Alcoholics Anonymous talks about it with the letter from the doctor. What they talked about and hypothesized, which I find true for myself, is the allergy that we have that makes us different from other people. So, yes, I get it. I went almost 3 years without drinking. And I knew I could, when I got sober, I knew I couldn't have anything. I believed this whole concept of like, it's the, as soon as I start drinking, I'm at the cocaine dealer's house and I don't even like cocaine.
And that's See, hilarious. And I would want cocaine before even drinking. And that's when I was like, oh, this is probably, like if I knew I was going to go out, I knew I was going to want it. So I'd try to line it up before I even went out.
Premeditating. Yeah, that's a big part of it. But so when I picked up, what happened is I was actually with some friends in Cabo, and I was like, I'm going to drink. And as soon as I had that sip of beer, I felt the allergy literally go, oh, my God, I need more. But I was trying to play it cool because everybody knew it was my first drink in 3 years pretty much. And I instantly had this incredible craving where I had to have more, more, more. And that's what makes us
right.
different. That, and I can only diagnose that for myself. I know that's what I have.
Right.
As soon as I have
some. And there's, you know, I think a lot of people don't like to say, oh, my disease, my disease. It's like, if my disease is that the synapses in my head
yeah.
aren't programmed like everybody else, then fine. That's my disease or my allergy.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's the disease of alcoholism, which I was suffering from, and now it's in remission, so to speak.
Right.
And I keep doing what it does, and you keep doing what mm-hmm. it does, and we stay sober. But right. as soon as we pick up the first drink, we're back. The disease is on. It's like the
yeah.
cancer
and,
came
and,
back.
And at least I can walk myself through that. Like, I haven't really had too many urges in 9 years, thankfully. But there's obviously times where I'm like, okay, this is a time.
We want relief.
This is a time where I would really, you know, want to drink, and then you have to think through, like, well,
yeah.
what is this going to do if I do that?
It doesn't solve any problems.
It's not going to do any good. And right. and I think a lot of people, when they do relapse, they do start off with trying to manage it for a year. It's like, okay, they'll have one drink here and there. But then they always end up in the same place.
If they're alcoholic, they will. Right.
right.
I heard somebody share, and it applies to drug addicts too. I heard somebody share, like, if you have a drinking or a drug problem, you'll quit and your problems will go away. But if you're a real alcoholic or drug addict, when you quit, now you have the problem, which is us, right? So, but let's get into that at
okay.
the end when we get into the recovery session. Although I love the topic. I love talking about that stuff. So you and I had that in common, that we had some great success at the high point of our using.
I went to Fox News Channel when I was 26. I was the youngest person to go there on air.
That's incredible. And you were a cokehead.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
There's a sick part of me that's like, that's so cool. Yeah. But okay, so the point is, we can have great success and be killing ourselves and have a fatal disease of addiction.
Mm-hmm. There's so many functioning drug addicts yeah. and alcoholics out there.
Many, many.
But I think that you either come to the point, which I did, where I knew I deserved more for myself. And I was like sick and tired of being sick and tired, as they say, sick and tired of feeling like crap all the time. And I knew I was going to get in trouble with the law from some sketchy coke dealer or whatever and lose my job. Or it was right around the time that Heath Ledger and DJ AM were dying and I was going to die in my
yeah.
sleep because there was too many things in my system.
So, yeah, that's what I wanted to get to. What made you hit bottom? What made you finally get help? Sound like, aside from passing out in the spaghetti, I had two DUIs. I left my band. I was homeless in my car. I mean,
oh,
it was bad. Yeah. Hey,
yeah,
don't
so,
make me feel
no,
bad.
No, I mean, everybody's...
Don't highbrow me, woman.
Everyone's bottom is different. So maybe
totally.
My bottom is higher, obviously.
Your bottom's when you stop digging, right?
Yeah. So, and I mean, I certainly don't want to find out if my bottom can go any lower. That's
it can
for
always
sure.
go
it
lower,
could,
right?
Yeah, it always
right?
can. One of the things that happened to me was I was on a train coming back from a party in the Hamptons where I just like done copious amounts of blow and had so many vodka Red Bulls. And I decided that I was going to take my pills because I guess I thought I was going to go back out when we got back into New York. And my friend and I, we were laughing because I had my strapless bra on my head and
yes.
I was pretending that I was.
I would have had fun with you.
I was a pageant queen. So
with a bra.
She was interviewing me. Yeah. And she took this video,
good.
But I didn't even, I was in a blackout. Like, I didn't even remember.
But you're,
that.
And you're a TV personality at this point, so that's not good.
Yeah, I do remember, like, thinking, oh, people probably recognize me and think I'm hilarious. Well, a week later, my friend finds that video on her phone and emails it to me. And I watched it in my Fox News office, and I was appalled. First of all, I didn't even remember that we had done that. And
yeah.
everyone on the train was looking at me in horror, like I was the most awful person. And I was like, my eyes were like crossed. I
yeah.
was just like snorting and like flopping all over and like slurring and just, I looked so awful and I just was horrified by my behavior and that in combination with running into people at work, like prominent people who are like, oh, yeah, I saw you wherever. And I would have no recollection of it. And
which makes you scared of, like, what did I do?
Right. And with the other things that I was already thinking, like, I'm going to die, I'm going to get in trouble. I just knew watching that video that it was going to be coming to an end soon. And so fast forward maybe 2 weeks later, I was down in Florida with some friends and my now ex-husband. But I ended up, like, taking a bunch of pills, and they couldn't wake me up, and they were really scared. And so...
Were you trying to kill yourself?
No, okay. I was not. I was never suicidal, ever.
Good.
And then... But I do think that I was... like not caring. I was probably really depressed, like not caring about anything either. Yeah. And so my husband at the time came up to me and he's like, hey, because he's like, this Ambien thing's like out of control and you need to go inpatient somewhere. And if not, like, we're getting a divorce.
That's and pretty I was smart
like,
of him.
And
huh?
I was like, F you. And he like went back downstairs. And then he came up with seven other people and they surrounded the bed. And I was like, oh my God, this is an intervention. And it was like my girlfriend from college. She's like, Court, remember you used to steal my Ritalin all the time and snort it?
They had the letters and they gave you
No, because it was impromptu. But they were scared because they couldn't wake me up. And I don't think anyone had seen me like in that state. And so it was what they said around the bed. Like, I had a Fox News couple that were there, and they're like, Court, you know, you're just really stressed, and take some time for yourself. And so my husband called my agent. He called Fox News. They were like, go get help. Like, thank you for being proactive about this, because so many people obviously have to go to rehab after some scandal.
Yeah.
And, God, checking into rehab, that was like the worst moment of my life. I was that whole first week. I was just so vulnerable and scared. But at least I made the decision, like, okay, I'm doing this.
Yeah, good
I'm gonna
for you.
Sit in the front of the class.
Yeah.
I'm gonna take notes. I'm gonna go to the extra meetings in town with the normal people in town. I'm gonna like do everything. And you don't have your I didn't have my BlackBerry for 28 days.
So you're super willing. That's awesome.
And then I did what they told me after the thing. I did 3 months of outpatient rehab after that. And
that's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, and then when I was 8 months sober, I got pregnant with my son. And then that helped me get through my first summer in New York City sober, because I was so concerned what other people were thinking about me not drinking, which now I don't care.
Oh, I know. It's such a weird thing we do.
That's one of the things you don't... Yeah, you're like, oh, I'm going to have a drink that looks like I'm drinking. It's like, who cares?
It's so
most people
weird.
Aren't even noticing what you're drinking. And those that are giving you a hard time about it have an issue.
They probably have an issue. I totally love this topic because I used to think that too. I think everybody who's sober does. I feel so different. It's like, no, you're not different.
Right.
And as silly and cheesy as this sounds, I got through it by this. I thought, well, who's the coolest guy or girl, right, in the world? Like the coolest. You'd see him at a party. They don't need to drink. They're funny, good looking. Like, you know, they have confidence and they don't need it. And if somebody said, hey, you want to drink? They go, no, I don't care to drink. So I realized this person could exist, and that's who I kind of wanted to choose to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So let's throw in your song. What's your other song?
My other song, that's more my divorce song, but I think that it can go for recovery as well.
Okay.
This is my fight song.
It's like a transformation song.
By Rachel Platten. It is. It's kind of like Take Back Your Life.
It's called Fight Song.
Fight Song.
Fight Song. Okay, so here we are with, as I said, the beautiful and wholesome looking.
Awesome.
No, you're wholesome now. Now.
Yeah, now I'm wholesome AF.
Courtney Friel, news anchor from KTLA 5. And she used to be on Fox News. And been in some films recently and TV shows. Anyhow, she's been sharing very vulnerably her story through addiction. And we're going to throw in another song here. This is Rock to Recovery Radio KX93.5. And this is Rachel Platten.
Fight Song.
Fight Song. We'll be right back.
Like a small boat on the ocean, sending big waves into motion. Like how a single word can make a heart open. I might only have one match, but I can make an explosion.
Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM. And by the way, this is a nonprofit radio station. So if you want to keep programs like this and all the other cool community service programs going, check out KX93.5.com and you can make a donation. Totally for nonprofit. I am here with Courtney Friel, former Fox and current KTLA 5 news anchor and movie star and TV star and ex-coke head, ecstasy loving, pass out in the pasta, doing all sorts of crazy stuff.
Best intro ever.
I know. I mean, but hey, isn't it rad? It makes us know that, you know, this disease of addiction does not discriminate, even if you're beautiful and wholesome looking like you. So you went to rehab. That's where we left off.
Right.
Your husband and the fam and the friends came in and were like, yo, you got a problem, girl. And the cool thing is you agreed to go.
I agreed to go.
And when you went in, what I loved is that you were willing. You like just,
right.
You attached yourself to it like somebody who's like, I'm going to college. You're like, I'm going to go to classes. I'm going to learn.
Well, I'm all or nothing, remember?
Yeah.
So I was all for rehab.
Yeah. And a lot of people are all or nothing in every way except the recovery. They're like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'll do that. But no, I'm not going to do that. And that often doesn't work.
Yeah. Well, I was told early on to take what works for you. So for me, I have a bunch of things and tools that I draw from to stay sober. And
yeah.
I guess that's probably where we're headed, like living sober.
Let's go where you're saying you felt really awkward and raw in the beginning, because I think that's important that we talk about that.
Right. And one of the things that was challenging as well was when I came back from rehab, Fox kind of, they were going through a transition period. So they had new people come in and they had reassigned, because I basically missed 6 weeks of work. So they reassigned my producer to another show, so I wasn't doing that one show anymore. I had had a Bill O'Reilly segment that I had just gotten. I'd probably done like 10 weeks of that, and then I just disappeared. So they replaced me, although the girl they replaced me with is one of the ones that had the sexual harassment lawsuit. So maybe
I wanted to ask about that, but we'll let that go.
Maybe I dodged a bullet on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
So it wasn't like, it was like I was losing my best friend of partying, but I was also losing my work too, because I wasn't getting on the air anymore.
So
I was going to focus on my recovery then. I mean, who cares? I'm always like, who cares on Bill O'Reilly's show? I mean, A, he's not even on Fox News anymore, and I am alive. And I was supposed to end up at KTLA. Like, I'm so much happier at KTLA than I was there. So.
Good. That's amazing.
I'm super grateful, though, that Fox was, I mean, they were great. They didn't even make me take any disability to go to rehab, like any vacation days. They were like, do what you need
they
to do.
Supportive.
And then when I came back, I think they realized like I was so stressed out because I was doing like 6 different shows every day for 2.5 years. I was hosting my own online show too and booking all the guests. I mean, I was crazed. Like I said, I'd get up and do all those story ideas and everything. And so then when I came back, like I was
Is that when
really
you're doing
tired.
Adderall?
Well, not after.
No, no, right.
No,
okay,
I have not obviously had one pill or one drug.
What was the date?
Since 09/09/09.
What?
That wasn't even
cool.
Planned. Some people plan their sobriety dates. And so I checked into rehab.
Don't try it. It's likely not going to work. Powerlessness. If we had power to control it.
Well, so the lady, I checked in on September 8th and she's like, all right, well, your sobriety date will be this, that. I was like, that is the coolest date ever. 09/09/09. Yeah.
That's so awesome. Good for you. And so how did you get through the raw emotions in the beginning? Because I'm sure there's so many people at home who want to know that. And what's key to...
Well, every day feels like Groundhog's Day and you're not... So, like, I wasn't used to being so present with myself all the time. So the days felt really long. And I was like, what do I do? It felt very boring.
Yeah.
I mean, I just kept doing what they kept telling me to do.
Yeah.
And then everyone said, it just keeps getting better. It just keeps getting better.
And you had faith.
I mean,
and
there were times, I think around year two and three, where I was like, oh, I'm never going to have fun again. And that's when I had my kids. And so I'm really grateful that meditation came in. Because that's helped me with that too, and your definition of fun just changes. Like now,
changes.
I want to be on a hammock reading a book on a warm island somewhere, and getting a massage and eating a brunch with friends.
And I don't think it changes because we're like, you know, bending our knee or anything like we have to accept this other life. What happened for me, and I would assume for you, is we change as people. So what we want. What we truly want changes. Like, you know, before would, you know, I was whatever, musician, sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Now it's like what you're saying, fulfillment becomes the true happiness, having a life of purpose, helping other people.
Yes.
And that high, instead of wearing off and you wake up the next day feeling like crap, that high lasts days when you think back of a great event with your sober friends, right? It's not a lesser feeling. It's actually a greater high.
Yeah, because they say your worst day sober is better than your best day drinking. And for years, I had an issue with that. I had an issue with that. And so I now get what that statement means. It's like mentally, my mental health is so much better now than it was back then on that really fun day on a yacht that I had.
Yeah.
I did have a ton of fun using drugs and drinking with friends and stuff.
Or
it's
we
just like
do
I
it.
Was a hot mess.
Yeah. I totally get it. What I used to do to try to make myself feel good was really shady, bad behaviors, too much drugs. Right now, what I do to make myself feel good actually works.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the difference, right? And I love that you shared that you had a couple years of not feeling super great.
Right.
But it was better than killing yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And these children that I've had, they were my blessings because I didn't really want kids before. And it was kind of they were both kind of surprises. And now they are just the most amazing human beings ever. And it's so fulfilling.
And they've never seen you loaded.
No, never.
That's amazing.
And I'm there for them. And I remember things now. And all of those events, like how much did I really even remember of those things? And so what you're saying, it's just fulfilling, meaningful experiences now.
Yes. So what would be to somebody who's new out there struggling, I love that you represent the class of people that it didn't have to get so bad. Because the stuff that made you stop, I didn't care about. You know what I mean? and I think that's a wonderful message, that it doesn't have to get so bad. You don't have to lose everything. What was key for you to getting and staying sober?
Once I became a mom, clearly I realized that I'm responsible for two little kids' lives and need to be 100% present in their life. But also, I'm so much better at my job being sober. There's no way that I could be hungover and have to like wake up and go into court and catch up on some crazy trial that's been going on and learn it in 10 minutes and turn around and come back outside and talk about it, or learn all this crazy material that's been going on in city council that has a bunch of history to it. Or it's just like, you have to be able to think so fast on your feet on that in the job that I do, and put together a story and dumb it down so that the regular audience understands it. Like, if I was hungover, I would never be able to do that.
Yeah. So what I hear is almost...
And I love being sober. I love feeling good most of the time. I mean, and meditation helps me when I do have the little kinks. Like, I'm a healthier person now. And so if I'm not feeling that great, like, I'll drink some ginger juice and meditate. And that usually helps things out. And I also know, like, now for... We mentioned that I was having a very, very stressful month with, like, pretty much worked every single day on top of the kids and all the events and everything that's going on. But, like... Now I know, starting next week when my kids are out of school for 3 weeks, like, I am saying no to everything. I'm just like going to take it easy. I need to schedule a vacation, because that self-care is important too.
I love it. I love it. Well, I thank you so much for coming down here sharing with us and everybody at home. And what a great show. It's so great to get to sit here and get to know you. So if you're out there and you're struggling, I hope you heard that you don't have to let it get so bad, and there's always a way out, right? You're never too sick. You're worth it. Recovery is totally possible. So this is Wes Geer on Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM, also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. This has been the amazing Courtney Friel, and we are out of here.
Thanks for having me.